Keeper Chat Series. I'm your host, Meg Krueger. I am the content lead here with Pioneer Athletics. And today I'm joined by two exciting gentlemen in the industry. One is my co-host, Weston, who I'm going to allow to take it away and introduce our guests.
Thanks, Meg. My name is Weston Appelfeller. I am the market technical advisor for Pioneer Athletics. And I'm extremely excited about today's guest. He's not just one of the best people I know. He's one of the most networked individuals in our industry. He's maintained fields at all levels for all ages. I'd like to introduce the field superintendent for the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution. Most importantly, though, the guardian of Boyd. Old Town Maine's very own Ryan Bazorn.
I just put him on there real quick since you mentioned it. But yeah, thank you very much. Excited to be here. That was a very generous, very nice introduction. I appreciate that. So I'm happy to be here. I think it's great what you guys are doing and happy to be a part of it.
Thanks. Ryan, I'm going to hit you with a question that I feel is the most important question that I could ask anybody in the industry, especially a guy that's been here for a long time like you have. I'm sure you probably have a different answer than some others, but most important question, how do you get away from work? What do you do for some free time? How do you get to family? What's your life look like there? So,
sure. I mean, it is a great question too. And it's one that I think a lot of, field managers, golf course superintendents, grounds managers, it's something we all struggle with, especially in season. And our season here at Gillette continues to just get longer every year. We opened up this year, January 11th, training when the Revs and the Patriots were eliminated from the playoffs January 10th, the day before. So when you have a season that runs essentially 12 months, finding that time and taking that time is super important with that balance. And when we do get the time off, my wife, Alexis and I and Boyd, and really our cat has been traveling with us a little bit too, Larry. We're very lucky. We live about an hour and a half from my family up in Southern Maine, and we can just shoot right up there. And, you know, we're 10 minutes from the beach and there's golf. And but a lot of times we'll just end up going up to Maine and hanging out and just kind of decompressing, getting away from it all. Personally, I love to golf whenever I can. I don't get to do it that much, and I'm not that good at it because of that. But I love to go out and play golf whenever I can. And Alexis and I just like to hang out and kind of decompress from all the craziness that happens here at Gillette.
Awesome. Great. I think Larry needs to become more of a focus of some social media posts. So.
Yeah, he's the man. He's a barn cat that we adopted from Tyler Vandenacker, who used to be one of our assistant superintendents here. His family has a big farm out by Worcester, and he had some barn cats that we were trying to get rid of, and so we adopted him from there. And so I call him Larry Bird, and my wife calls him Larry David. So, you know, either way, he's Larry, but he's got a great personality, and I never thought I'd be a cat person, but he and Boyd are best buds, so they hang out quite a bit.
Well, yeah, we'll have to count how many times we mention Boyd in this chat, because he really is the star of the show. I mean, he's taken Twitter by storm. I think he's had his own exposés in magazines. He's definitely the man of the hour. So we'll have to keep a running tally. yeah. I love that Weston had to look down at the piece of paper for his title, but then he seamlessly delivered your title. So kudos to Weston on that one.
Impressive.
And it was a mouthful for sure, because you are a man of many talents here in our industry. Like Weston mentioned, a veteran. So lay the groundwork for us. You know, tell us about your position, your turf origin story. Give us a little glimpse into, you know, your work.
Sure. So here at Gillette, we do have the stadium field, obviously, which is the game field for the New England Patriots and New England Revolution. And with however many home games for the Revolution, you know, 8 to 10 home games for the Patriots, they're still a minority user in the stadium, because everything now is just about, it's event-based, it's revenue-driven. And so we were talking a little earlier, we can get into it more later, but we've got a concert tonight and we've got an MLS game on Saturday. So that, you know, the game field gets used quite a bit. It's our busiest year ever this year. But we also are lucky enough to have both training facilities for both teams on site here at Foxborough as well. So we've got 3 natural grass fields for the football team and 3 natural grass fields for the soccer teams. I say soccer teams because we have the New England Revolution, their first team. They have their brand new training facility that opened in 2019. 2 of those fields are dedicated to their youth. And then there's one separate field that is the MLS Next Pro, so the Revolution 2. Is their primary field, as well as the development academy, the youth programs, and everyone else uses that field as well. So that's kind of where we're at on site. So we've got 7 fields that we maintain regularly, as well as a smaller, the 60-yard indoor facility that we have. And that's what we have now. And then, you know, going into my background a little bit, Weston ties into this quite a bit. He's a big mentor for me. You know, I got into turf when I was 16, 17 years old. And like a lot of guys, it was just, I wanted to be outside and needed a summer job and was working at a municipal golf course up in central Maine. I really liked being outside, thought I was going to go into landscape design. And also, you know, thought I was going to be the next great basketball player too. So I went to a small college in Vermont, for landscape design, and also to, so that I was able to continue my basketball career, if you want to call it that. Was there for a couple of years, got an associate's degree there in landscape design and ornamental horticulture. While I was at Vermont Tech for that, I attended New England Grows, which is a big landscaping horticulture trade show in Boston every year. And one of the speakers that year was Dave Meller, who's the head groundskeeper at Fenway here in Boston. And, you know, I had always been fascinated, watched the Red Sox my whole life and seen all the patterns and, you know, everything that attracts people to a baseball field. And so his talk was really interesting, and that's when I first really found out that sports turf, sports field management was even really an option. So I looked into it a little bit more. I found out that UMass has one of the best programs in the country, far and away better than the Ohio State. Found out about that, ended up applying to University of Massachusetts after I graduated from Vermont Tech to the Stockbridge School of Agriculture there. Got my associates there and then transferred into the bachelor program. So I was in school way too long, is the moral of the story, but I'm really happy with how it turned out. I did my first internship while at UMass at Fenway, before Weston got there, and my, second, third and fourth year at Weston, I believe, where all Weston was the second assistant groundskeeper at the time. So, Weston has known me from when I was at my absolute worst as a college intern, you know, think you know it all type of employee to now where I hope that I've grown a little bit since then. So did my internships at Fenway, worked there all 4 years while I was at UMass. Also did a quick summer internship at in South Portland, Maine at the Wainwright facility with Rick Peruzzi up there. That was a great experience because it opened my eyes to the kind of youth programming and how good a facility can be for public use. Graduated from UMass in 2010, finished out the season with the Red Sox that year and jumped on here at Gillette actually for the previous superintendent, John Bankson. So I jumped onto his crew for that year, worked until February of 2011, and Jared Minnick down at Maryland Soccerplex hired me for my first full-time job. So I packed up my Jetta, drove to Maryland, and I was there for 8 years. Worked my way up from assistant in training there up to taking over for Jared as director of grounds in 2014, 2015, and stayed there until 2019 when I got the call to make my way back to New England and take over as field superintendent here at Gillette. So that was a very drawn out explanation, but it's a lot of little places that I've been, and you know, I'm grateful for every opportunity that I've had to get me where I am today.
Thanks for that, Ryan. Clearly, you know, you mentioned we'd work together. I appreciate our time together, but I don't appreciate the subtle jab at my alma mater there, Ohio State. So it didn't go unnoticed. But obviously,
he definitely pointed out that you're older than him. I think he made that clear as well, that you'll be green before he does.
yes, absolutely. You know, you mentioned a lot of all-stars that you've worked with and alongside there. I'm definitely not one of those, but, you know, I like Rick Peruzzi. If it was South Portland, you know, you've seen different levels of groundskeeping and your career has went over the last, you know, 15 years or so. You know, you just mentioned that. How have you seen the role of a groundskeeper evolve during that time, you know, from place to place or from year to year even?
Yep. It's a great question. I think it's continuing to evolve. And you said 15 years, and that was a gut check to even think that it's been that long. But you're right. I think one thing, working in different levels, you know, starting at professional baseball as an intern and then moving into the municipal side at South Portland while still working at Fenway, and kind of seeing both of those levels and how, whether it's a staff size or a budget or, you know, the difference in those two facilities, the end goal is always the same, right? We want, as groundskeepers, we want to make sure that we're putting the best possible field we can forward, and we're doing it in a professional way. I think that's been one of the big things. And whether it's with Dave or Rick or Jared down in Maryland, one of the big things that I've been lucky enough to work for all these guys that have really pushed the envelope as far as increasing the professionalism in our industry. I think even 15, 20 years ago, you could ask the general public about, you know, somebody who takes care of a football field or a baseball field, and the old, you know, cartoons of the groundskeeper Willie, or, you know, even commercials that are on TV today portray people in our industry to just be kind of Joe Schmoes that are out there riding a mower and cut off jeans. And, you know, what we're trying to do is show that our industry is a bunch of really hardworking professional people who take it very seriously. And there's a lot that goes into it that people don't realize. So again, you'll find out, and I apologize for all the listeners, but I tend to ramble. So a very long way of explaining, I think the biggest thing is really just trying to increase the professionalism in our industry as groundskeepers.
Yeah, I've definitely seen, you know, everybody kind of playing a role in that in the last 5 years since I've joined the industry, is that it's become like a movement that everyone wants to be a part of, is just legitimizing, earning a seat at the table, in really just getting the word out and combating those misconceptions of, yeah, that have been there for so long. But I think one of the things that has really played a huge role in that is how professional a head groundskeeper or an assistant or what have you has to be, and well-rounded beyond what happens on the turf. So like you mentioned, like, it now encompasses scheduling, managing budgets, negotiating for costs and labor. You know, what are some of those business best practices that you're currently using in your position that have, you know, that go beyond managing grass?
Yeah, for sure. But before I answer that, I thought of something after I said that when Weston was speaking. I have a very vivid memory. He probably won't remember this, but I came out to help him when he was in Columbus for the USA Mexico, one of many that they hosted there. And everybody, you know, I was still pretty young at that point, pretty green. And we had gotten there, and, you know, everybody got their t-shirt and this, that. And I went out, put my t-shirt on, started to go out to the field. He's like, hold on. And he said, go back, tuck your shirt in, then you come out. And that's one of those very random things, like, that shouldn't stick in somebody's brain like that. And at the time, I was like, oh, like, what do you mean I got to tuck my shirt in? It's not that big of a deal. But then you think about it and you look back on it, and something small like that can make a really big difference when it's, you know, over an entire crew, where if you've got 15 guys that are out there checking irrigation with 25, 30,000 people in a stadium, if you've got guys that are out there mismatched and cut off shirts, and it doesn't look as professional, where something as simple as tucking your shirt in and having a crew that matches and looks the part can make a really big difference. So you probably had no idea that I remembered that, Weston, but it's something that's really stuck with me. And my guys probably hate you for it, because I'm very particular about uniforms on game days here. So now, that being said, answering your question about, you know, business best practices, there's a lot that goes into that. You know, I think you mentioned getting a seat at the table and having that well-rounded background. You know, the smartest agronomist in the world can have zero table manners and have no common sense or personal skills, and they're not going to get what they need at a meeting with a greens committee. And the same goes for sports field managers, where it's not just about growing grass. That's a huge part of what we do, obviously. But at the same time, the tools that we need to grow that grass, or the scheduling that we need to get the breaks that we need, or just to be creative, those are the things that you need, the extra stuff, the behind the scenes stuff, the professionalism, and to be able to sit down in a boardroom, or sit around a conference room table with your direct report or your boss or the COO or whoever it is that you have to deal with. Those personal skills are really important. So I think it's a long answer, and it's a very overarching answer, but I think really we have a lot of tools that we need to pull from as groundskeepers, and agronomy is a big one, but so are personnel skills and budgeting and all. You have to be a well-rounded groundskeeper, I think.
Ryan, at what phase in your career did you start doing some of this stuff? Like, you talked about, weather scheduling, or just being, more of a leader. When did that come in, and where do you see it, or where do you expect it then with your staff? What do you expect each one of them to be able to do, whether budgeting, scheduling, telling the crew what to do, any of that sort of things?
Sure. I think there's not really there's not a specific time I think I could point to. I think it was just things picked up along the way, out of necessity. Obviously as an intern, you're not going to get a lot of experience with budgeting and making spray programs and coming up with an agronomic plan, but you can kind of use context clues from every situation that you're in as you work your way up to say, okay, if I'm upset about having to be in early one day, or there's decisions that are made behind the scenes for all that. So I kind of tried to pick things out along the way from all the different groundskeepers I've worked with. But I think obviously the big one, if I had to point to a specific one, is when I took over as director of grounds at the Soccerplex, because, learned a lot from Jared in the 3 or 4 years that I worked for him there. Learned a lot on the agronomic side, learned a lot on the budgeting side, but it's a very busy place, just like a lot of our places. So to sit down and say, here's how to put together a budget, here's how to put together an agronomic program, it takes a lot of time to do that. And, it was when I took over as director, it just kind of happened, and I needed to be able to figure out how to do that on my own. And really kind of take hold, which is good, because everybody has their own ways of doing things, and you want to tweak how you run a budget or whatever it is. But I think, and my goal, and from coming up that way, excuse me, and learning that way, my goal is to try and find time in the slower times throughout the year to work with our staff to say, okay, here's something, in our yearly evaluations, this employee said that they might be interested in learning how to get on a tractor and run an aerifier. So if we've got a slow week and we know we're going to run an aerifier, take that extra time, spend some time with that person, get them that experience. And even with assistance, whether it's a budgeting question or an agronomic question, just trying to plug time in, because if you don't do that, then next thing you know, it's going to be New Year's and the season's starting all over again.
Well, and that touches a little bit on mentorship, which is such a huge part of our industry. And as a leader, how important is it to make sure you are checking in with your employees and making it a priority to help them grow when the job, could easily be a head down, let's get to work every single day type of gig? How do you work that into, your role as their boss?
It's a fantastic question, and it's one that I'm still continuing to work on trying to be better at to this day. When I started here in August of 2019, the previous groundskeeper and essentially the whole staff was gone, so we were starting over from scratch. And really from that day, it felt like we were never able to catch our breath for 2 or 3 years. And I can look back, and I look at that now as it was like I almost use it as an excuse for not taking more time and not being more proactive. So I've been really trying to work on taking that time to talk to the guys. And we had a great seminar this past off season with a local company up here about leadership. And one of the things that stuck with me from that was to take this thing And when you're having a conversation with someone, to just put it down. And because whether or not, you know, we're all on our phones all the time, and a lot of us can multitask and send an email or send a text on a phone and still have a conversation with someone, but you'll never feel as connected on the other end of that conversation if the other person's holding their phone. So that's one thing I've really tried to work on is literally just setting the phone down, having the conversation, whether it's a work conversation, a personal conversation, that, hey, how was your weekend conversation? Just to show that you're actually invested in the conversation that you're having.
Simple but necessary. Mm-hmm. Probably could be applied on the home front as well, and relationships would be cured all over the world.
Yeah, everybody wanted the computer in their pocket, so now everybody has a computer in their pocket, and we're trying to figure out how to get off. But
yeah,
it's a necessary tool. It's something that we all need and utilize. Every minute of every day, but figuring out ways to kind of set it down and get away from it is also important.
Of course, definitely.
Ryan, I do think you just set up like a great transition though. Like, can you talk to us about some of the technology that you're utilizing right now that is maybe, you know, cutting edge or a way to secure, you know, any kind of information that you can then go back to your leadership group and talk to? Any new stuff out there that you're seeing or using?
Nothing crazy really. We're working hard here to try and update all of our systems. It's been a little bit older of technology that has been utilized here at this site for a while. So just something similar or simple like, moisture meters or, Soil Scout we use for our wireless soil sensors. We're lucky enough. One example is our Revolution training facility. One of our fields has a fully heated hydronic field, and it's connected wirelessly and runs essentially via the wireless soil sensor. So we can set everything up to say, we want to make sure that our soil temperature doesn't get below 55 degrees until the season's over. And we'll, you know, set everything up, do our set points. We can monitor that on our phones and keep an eye on everything. Or, you know, that's a pretty complex thing. But like I said, something simple like just running a Pogo moisture meter to guide our irrigation scheduling is a big upgrade from what it was before, where it was just kind of, well, it hasn't rained in a couple of days. Things are looking warm. Things are looking dry. The old groundskeeper technique, it's just kind of sticking your fingers in the grass and seeing how things are feeling or how it's reacting. Things like that. It's something simple can make a big difference. We have one small grow light unit that we've been trialing here and there in a couple of different spots. That's been pretty promising. I think just trying to get overall raise the level of technology that we have, and then hopefully soon, one thing we're looking at is a GPS auto steer sprayer where it has individual nozzle control. It just essentially will make our sprayable program much more efficient when we can get that. So that's our next big thing down the pipeline we're looking for.
So as you get that technology and certain things work or don't work, how are you then having those conversations with the gals or the guys above you in order to help set that budget up for the next time that you want to make an ask like that? Are you going back and giving them data points? Or are you going back and making sure that they can walk out and see it? What elements are you then using to move forward and help secure future new items?
Yeah, sure. So we're very lucky here where, my direct report and a lot of our higher ups here are very bullish on trying to get new technology into the stadium. So we've been lucky where if we feel the big thing for us is to prove or to show that we feel it can increase our operational efficiencies. So if there's something that takes us six staff members, it takes them 3 hours to do it. If there's a piece of technology that we think can cut that in half or reduce the staff that is needed to do that specific task, that's something that they'll give us some leeway to be able to try. And the companies have been really good as well, where it's something that we think could work, but we're not ready to go full-fledged into it. We want to do a trial. We've been lucky with some really good partners to try that out as well. And, you know, one thing I didn't mention, we do have a turf tank. This is the first year running the turf tank robotic painter. And that's been something that's, again, we don't use it for everything. We use it a lot for just our hashes. Our hashes alone is a huge time saver for us, where it would be one person pushing the painter, one person painting the hashes, and two people moving the stencils. Not to mention, in advance of that, you have to measure out the marks, lay the strings down. So you're talking a pretty solid operation that's now just one person, one tablet, one robot, and it's doing everything in half the time. So that's like one specific example that we've had pretty good results with, but really just trying to pick and choose what we think is going to increase our efficiency as an operation as a whole.
So for someone who may not be lucky to have like, you know, higher ups who understand what's needed, or they don't even have, you know, a relationship to start those conversations, what advice could you give like a groundskeeper who's at that position and really needs to start earning themselves that seat at the table so that they can present the data points or present the needs that they have for their, you know, budgets or labor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important to start building those relationships early, from day one, or even through the interview process and the hiring process, to say you need to kind of target and figure out who is the person that's going to be making the purchasing decisions for my department. Is there someone above that they have to even justify that to? And once you figure out kind of the chain of command and the hierarchy, then it's figuring out what drives those people. Do I have a VP of stadium ops that's very data driven, and you can hand him a sheet and say, here is the percentages, here's the numbers, here's the budget, and this is what we think we'll save? Or is it someone, you know, is your VP of stadium ops more of like a field person, where it's like, hey, we really think this is going to work, we really want to try it, and you know, we think it's going to be better for our staff? You kind of have to figure out what type of people you're dealing with, and then take your asks or your requests in that way, where you can, because if you have someone that's super data driven and you say, hey, I really think this is going to work, and they're going to say, well, show me the data. Or you could say, here's 3 pages of data and research trials and all this information, to someone who's, they're like, I don't want to look at that. Do you think it's going to work, or do you not think it's going to work? So you just kind of have to get a feel for that type of personality and tailor those conversations to whoever you're talking to.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. Just being able to read a room and really gauging who you're up against. Because again, it's a non-starter if you come in and talk about, you know, data points with somebody who wants you to paint a picture for them. And so I think that's just incredible advice and really a good, easy first step, just getting in the room with those people and trying to gauge what's going to really resonate with them. So yeah, I love that.
Getting to know people in general, building your network. We talk a lot as sports field managers about networking, and we do that a lot at the national shows and the local chapter shows. But even internally in your own departments and your own businesses, build that network of people where, we have monthly socials here at Gillette where all the departments can get together and hang out and meet new people, or even just going to meetings that aren't necessarily directly affecting you, but you have people in those rooms that you want to get to know and can help you guide your decision-making processes moving forward. You know, build that network of people. And I think the more people trust that your interests are in the right place, it's only going to help you down the road.
How important is networking in the industry to you? Like, how do you utilize that?
I think it's super important. I like we've talked about, I feel very lucky to have the network that of people that just directly I've worked with. But even through that, I've met some of the best people that I know through sports field management. Starting at UMass and getting involved in the local chapter in ESMA back in 2007, was able to get a scholarship through them. I met a number of really, really good local guys and girls that are involved in the industry, and just tried to, that built that kind of foundation for me to know how important that is. And I've tried to utilize that at a national level where, you know, I don't know, with climate change, we're not going to get into that, but I might need to know how to grow Bermuda grass again sometime up here. But I always want to stay in touch with guys that are in the South or the Southwest or the Northwest, whatever it is, because we might be growing different types of grass. We might have different sports, but again, we all face similar challenges at the end of the day. And the more different opinions that we can get, the more direct experience that we can pull from is only going to help us out. And so I hope people feel, and I think that they do, you know, we all get phone calls every now and then. Weston knows how terrible I am at picking up the phone sometimes, but I hope people feel that they can call me, because we're always, all of us love what we do and are always willing to have those conversations. And I've always valued the time and conversations I've had with anybody talking about these things. And, you know, I just want to reciprocate moving forward.
Definitely. We might get cut off here, so if we do, just go right back into the same meeting. But I do have a follow-up with that. Like, how effective do you think Turf Twitter is, and just simply sliding into someone's DMs with a question or an ask?
Yeah, Turf Twitter is an interesting place. I think it can be super effective and super helpful, and I think it can also be super toxic. You know, I think that it is what it is with social media in general. I've gotten caught in it a couple times. I've gotten stuck in the mud and probably hit send when I shouldn't have hit send on some stuff. But at the same time, there's, you know, a few months back, there's a Mike Rollins who does Real Grinding, and he's got a great Twitter account. And we were having some issues with our after cut appearance. And I saw that he had been talking with John Thomas in Cincinnati about very similar. So I literally just sent him a DM. Hey, are you interested? And then he happened to be in the Northeast like a month later. So we stopped by. You know, and again, it just goes, whether it's picking up a phone or opening a Twitter account or X account, whatever you want to call it, I think it can be very helpful, but I think it's also, you have to be cautious with, the battles you get into.
Well, like most things, tread lightly, use common sense. It's easier said than done. All right. So I will bring us right to our next segment, which is the weather report. It's our opportunity to talk about what has us excited in the industry, any events that are up and coming, or anything that we've seen out there in the world that has us excited. So in an attempt to bring everything back to Noah Kahan, Weston and I's favorite current artist, the thing that has me most excited is his upcoming tour. He's extended it, and he will be at Fenway. Weston had like 22,000 people in front of the queue, in front of him in the queue yesterday for tickets. So he was unlucky. I got tickets for Cleveland. Nice. But Weston is still hanging out there to dry. Someone needs to get him in there. But that just kind of brings me to talk about, you know, it, the ability for more people to see an artist, for an artist to sell out a stadium is a huge accomplishment, of course. But what is it, you know, for someone buying a concert ticket, they have no idea what is happening, you know, what goes into having someone play at Fenway Park or, you know, at the New England Stadium. Like, what really goes into that? Does it have you excited, or, you know, the segue that we're kind of going into in our industry? What is that really, you know, for you? And I think Weston also wants to add in there.
Yeah, before Brian answers this, I just want it to be known that I did earlier this year when I moved to New England. I was like, all right, yes. I looked up the concert schedule, what July's going to have, and I texted Ryan. I was like, what do I got to do to come join your crew so I can go to Metallica next year? And he's like, please, not happening.
You want to tell him why I said no?
Because he won't let me come join him. So,
that's not true. I said, no, you can't join the crew. And the reason I said that is because I won't be a part of the crew those days, because I'm going to be in the crowd. I got my tickets. That's the thing. If you want to know what I'm most excited for, it's Metallica coming here next year. Cause they're, you know, I have two favorite artists, Metallica and Tom Petty, which you really couldn't be two more opposite than that. But, I have been, clamoring for Metallica to come here since I started. And, when I got the email, internal email that they were going to be here next year, I got super excited. So that's why Weston, you can't be on the crew, but maybe we can figure out a way to, you know, we'll put you in a piece of luggage or something, get you in here,
whatever.
But yeah, so, you know, this is one of those questions where it's like, how much time do you have as far as how much goes into concerts and events here at the stadium? this is our busiest year at Gillette Stadium ever for concerts this year. We have Carol G concert tonight, which I don't know how familiar a lot of our podcast listeners will be with that artist, but she's a Latin artist very similar to like Bad Bunny and those big groups. She's our last concert of the year this year. She will be show 13 of the year, so I'm not going to get them all, but we had three nights with Taylor Swift. We had Beyonce. We had Ed Sheeran for two nights. We had, I'm forgetting. We had Luke Bryan. It just really never ended this year. And, you know, guaranteed no one that comes to that concert has any idea what goes into it from a field standpoint. I think a lot of people that come to those concerts might not even have any idea how much goes into it from a planning and production standpoint as well. It's a massive undertaking. We had, I'll give you a quick overview of our last 2 weeks because it kind of touches all those bases. So we hosted the Dolphins last Sunday for Sunday Night Football. So it's an 8:20 kickoff. As soon as the game was over, we started breaking down the field and scrubbing the field, getting rid of all the football lines because we knew that flooring had to start going down Monday morning. And what that is all leading to is we have Carol G tonight. This is 2 weeks ago. We have Carol G tonight, and then we have an MLS game Saturday. So looking forward 2 weeks after that Sunday Night Football game, we knew that as soon as that flooring came up, we knew we need to have soccer down, and we anticipate getting access to the field at 6 a.m. on Saturday. So that's not enough time to scrub football and get everything cleaned up from the concert and get ready for soccer. So we made the decision to stay after the Sunday Night Football game, scrub the lines. The plan was to paint soccer underneath the flooring, so that way something was there when we pull the flooring on Saturday. Unfortunately, it rained the whole time we were scrubbing, which was great for scrubbing, but not so much for painting. So we ended up laying out our four corners for soccer in aerosol, so everything's down, and we painted one sideline in aerosol so that the flooring guys had a reference point. And flooring went down Monday. Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks load in started on Tuesday. They loaded in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, soundcheck Friday, Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks concert Saturday. Billy Joel, Stevie Nicks loaded out Saturday night into Sunday morning, and Carol G load in started Monday. She loaded in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and today is her final. They're doing their final production load in this morning, soundcheck this afternoon, concert this evening. Production starts loading up as soon as the concert's over. It's her last tour stop as well. So that is something that, you know, internally I worry about a little bit because if it's the last stop on tour, maybe the stagehands may not be as motivated to, or maybe they might be more motivated to get out of there because they're done after, but they don't have another show to get to. So we're a little worried about the loadout schedule going smoothly. But they'll load out overnight and all day tomorrow, and flooring's supposed to start coming off tomorrow evening about 5 to 7 p.m. We'll start. It takes 10 to 12 hours to remove the full field of flooring. We get access to the field Saturday morning at 6 a.m. We'll come in and do our normal concert cleanup, which is blowing debris, sweeping debris, running magnets multiple times over the whole field to make sure that it's safe. And then we'll groom it, mat it, make sure it's cleaned up and ready to go. Paint the soccer field, and we have to be off the field by 11 a.m. because there are youth games that start at noon. Those games go from noon to 5:30, and then we have an MLS game at 7:30. So it's been a crazy 2 weeks. Luckily, from a field crew standpoint, once we get the field prepped, we get it ready for the flooring company. The flooring company comes in, takes care of all that, and then these are the times that we can really focus on our practice fields when there's nothing for us to do at the stadium for those 2 weeks. So it's going to come back and hit us hard on Saturday because we'll be here from 6 a.m. until after the Revs game Saturday night. And then we've got a Revs 2 game Sunday, a Revs 2 playoff game on Sunday. Then we have 2 days off, quote unquote off. And then we've got another Revs game Wednesday night. And if Revs 2 win their playoff game on Sunday, then we host another Revs 2 playoff game the following Friday. And then we have the Patriots game on Sunday. So, it's going to be busy.
We rolling 2 week schedule in a mind of a groundskeeper. It never ends. You drop a day off the backside and you add another day on the front side. And that is all you think about for that given time. And you always think that there's going to be that one day that's like, oh, it's almost over. And then you just roll right into something else. So
Yeah.
It's when you actually get that off day or that off week that it's like the greatest feeling in the world. So
And you know that there's nothing that you have to worry about. It is rare, but that feeling and that stress relief that you get from that, it can really recharge those batteries for the upcoming season sometimes. So this is a good one because we know at least when the flooring comes up this time, it's not going back down until next year. So, and what hurts a little more is that we'll be resurfacing our game field after the football season this year. So next time it goes down, it'll be on a brand new field, which will be painful. It's always painful, but at least we know we have a few months before we have to put flooring down again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think we did that entire podcast and we didn't mention the World Cup, which at some point we're going to have you back on to go further into.
Yeah.
And what that, I guess, 4-year rolling schedule would look like in your head. So,
it's constantly rolling. We actually just had a big FIFA site visit on Tuesday. It's amazing. I actually texted my wife sitting in some of the meetings on Tuesday, and it's like, you just can't imagine logistically how much goes into hosting a World Cup. And that's just at our stadium, let alone 15 other stadiums in 3 countries. It's just logistically, it's an incredible feat. And we went to Qatar in November of last year and hit 4 years before the event started. Went into that thinking we've got plenty of time, no problem. And I left after seeing how much goes into it and started thinking we don't have anywhere near enough time to get this done. So always it's super exciting, let alone just being able to put grass back out here at Foxborough. That's something that I'm a natural grass guy. I'm very excited about that opportunity. I'm not going to get into the grass versus turf for NFL Weston. I see that look. So we could chat about that offline sometime, but that event's going to be absolutely amazing. It's a bucket list event. I'm definitely happy to chat about that another time.
Ryan with the hot button issues.
I'm not making it a hot. It's made a hot button issue. I'm just.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Weston, does that count as your weather report? The World Cup?
Yeah,
you have another one for us.
Nope, that counts. I think we're good there. The only thing that I wished I would have mentioned in this podcast, but I'm going to throw in the end, is when I was introducing him, the one line I left out is he's a historic second place finisher at Hotshot Basketball.
Fake news.
Unfortunate night for him. He lost to the wrong person that'll never let it go. So anyway, with that, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yep, that's a good one to end on. No, I do appreciate it. I'm going to get revenge with you at Hotshot next time we go to the city. But thank you guys very much for having me on. I really appreciate it. Keep up the good work with these podcasts, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right.